down here, and I thought maybe it was the cops or something. I didn't know what the fuck to do. I thought I could get out the way I came in, but I saw you there, and then I saw the window probably at the same time you saw the window, and I'm so sorry if... well, yeah, you're obviously okay. I knew there were many things wrong with that incredibly long sentence, but I didn't have the brains to dissect it. The best I could do was, "Who are you?" The man didn't say anything. His silhouette started to rock back and forth slightly. "That depends on who you are," he said simply. Hell, even I didn't know who I was right now. I shook my head. "I asked you first." He sighed and reached back into his pocket. He fished out a business card and handed it to me. He picked up his camera and shone it on the black paper. "Dex 4A, I read the shiny white print aloud. "Producer, cameraman, cinematographer, Shonet." I flicked the card over. There was nothing but a Seattle address. I looked up at him, at his face that I couldn't see. "Are you from West Coast Living or something?" He laughed. "Fuck no." I stuck the card in my pocket and felt strength returning into my bones and into my tongue. I was glad all my courage hadn't deserted me. "Well, Dex 4A, I have a feeling that whatever you guys are doing here tonight, you're doing so without the permission of my uncle, who owns the lighthouse."
"There's no one else here. It's just me."
Now it was my turn to laugh. "Look, I don't care. I'm not going to report you. I shouldn't even be here myself. Just get your crew together or whatever and get out of here before you do get in trouble." The man, Dex, stopped rocking.
"It's just me," he repeated. "Did you see someone else here?"
His voice became pitchy. Something about his change of tone alarmed me. "Yes," I said slowly. "I heard you upstairs and I was going to go out the window, but I saw the shadow of someone pass by, outside." There was silence. He shuffled in the dark and moved closer to me. I wished I could see his face properly.
"Are you sure you saw something?"
he asked. I was starting to doubt myself a bit with the questions, but I stuck to my guns. "Yes, I saw someone. Someone walked past the window, swear to God."
"Where did you come from? Did anyone come with you?"
I shook my head. He raised the light so it was on my face. I winced.
"Sorry," he said,
not sounding very sorry at all.
Well, never mind.
"Never mind?" I couldn't help but sneer. "You just broke into my uncle's lighthouse. Don't you tell me to never mind." I realized it wasn't probably the best idea to start provoking a complete stranger, especially when you actually hadn't seen his face yet and you were in a dark, possibly abandoned lighthouse together, but... He straightened up, his figure blocking the moonlight, and reached down with his hand to help me up. He wasn't very tall at all, maybe 5'9". I took it hesitantly, and he brought me up to my feet. I wavered a bit at the change in height and gravity, and within seconds he had his arms around both sides of me. He smelled like Old Spice aftershave. I felt like I was in some bad drama on the Lifetime Network.
"You okay?"
he asked. His face wasn't too far away from mine. I turned around on the spot so that my back was to the window and the moonlight was coming in on his face, illuminating it. He was a surprisingly handsome guy. Maybe I was expecting a bald man with a beard, but he wasn't like that at all. His jaw was wide and round, totally acceptable. A dusting of an Errol Flynn mustache traced his upper lip, and his chin was shaded by his scruffy beard. He had fathomless dark eyes framed by brows that were devilishly arched and set low on his forehead. A simple eyebrow ring graced his right eyebrow. It was a very 90s look. A man after my own heart, apparently. He reminded me of Robert Downey Jr. in his strung-out drug days. He watched me, his eyes glittering darkly in the moonlight, full of intensity. I felt relieved that he looked like a normal person, and almost tickled that he was quite a looker as well. "Just a bit dizzy," I managed to say. He kept his gaze with mine. It was a bit unnerving after a while. I must have shown on my face because he smiled very slowly, showing perfect white teeth.
"Good," he said. "Promise not to sue."
I eyed him warily. "I won't. Can't speak for my uncle, though." He pursed his lips and seemed to think about it, though his eyes remained motionless.
Why are you here?
He finally asked. We're having a bonfire on the beach. I got sick of hanging around teenagers and wanted to come here. My uncle never let me come here when I was younger. I didn't tell anyone, I just left. I was hoping to film some stuff. At my own mention of filming, I panicked. My camera! I reached down and pulled it up in front of my face. I turned it on, and the lights flared and then steadied. I couldn't see the lens, but Dex grabbed it and held it in front of the light. He peered at it, brows furrowing, and gently put it back around my neck.
It's fine. I thought you wrecked the shit out of mine when you ran into me.
He lifted his camera up and patted it. I immediately felt guilty, even though it was his own damn fault for trespassing.
You're right, he continued, reading my face. Who cares? I probably deserve to have this camera smashed.
I was about to say something else. What exactly, I don't know, but I have a feeling I would have tried to make him feel better when there was another loud thump from up above. I froze. I could feel him freeze, too. I slowly looked over at him. He was watching me intently.
You sure you came alone? He whispered.
The fact that he had to ask again chilled me. Are you? I answered. He nodded gravely. I swallowed hard. We both listened hard, still as death. Another thump followed. My mind started to reel wildly. Was this Dex guy really alone? Maybe this was still the rape palace, and he was trapping me down here while the bigger guys did all the work. There was an air of uncertain danger about him, though that could have been just the situation, or his floppy, messy dark hair and Byronic mannerisms. I eyed the window. Dex caught my stare and shook his head as if to warn me. I gave him an incredulous look. He leaned into my ear, his lips brushing my lobe. A contact that felt like many lightning bolts were traveling along my skin in a heated fury and burrowing into my head. That feeling alone was distracting. I closed my eyes and enjoyed it.
Are you 100% sure that no one else came with you here?
He whispered, his low voice joining the static and traveling in waves down my spine. I shook my head and tried to focus. Even if someone did follow me, there was no way they could get inside the lighthouse before me. Hell, I didn't even know how Dex got into place if he didn't come through the window. I put that question aside for now. The thumps continued. I eyed the window again and started to automatically move towards it. With him right beside me, he didn't yield.
We have to go upstairs, he whispered.
I almost laughed loudly, but caught myself. Was he fucking crazy? I wasn't going upstairs. I was going out the window and back to Uncle Al's where I could call the cops. If that got Dex in trouble, so be it. He put his hand under my chin and tilted it up so that I was looking at him. It was okay. I liked looking at him.
You'd be best to stay with me, he said.
I couldn't believe it. A part of me wanted to stay with him for some reason, but the rational part knew that some reason wasn't good enough. I shook my head violently. You? I don't even know who the fuck you are. You give me a business card. I'm not going to be part of your rapist tower. I said that last part a little too loudly. He raised his eyebrows and pursed his lips. I guess he was a bit taken aback.
Go then, he said slowly. But once you are out that window, run all the way back to your uncle's place. Don't stop to look at anything. Even if you run into something, just keep running. It would be better if you just kept your eyes closed the whole way.
My body was covered in chills as he said that. I was suddenly afraid to leave his side. He seemed to know a lot of things that I didn't. What's upstairs? I asked. Do you know? He shrugged, rather nonchalantly, considering the circumstances.
I have an idea. That's why I'm here.
Why are you here?
I'll show you, he said.
He reached down and grabbed my hand. With his other, he hoisted his camera on his shoulder. He eyed my own camera around my neck.
You may want to turn that on. It's better if we get as many ways of recording this as possible.
Well, shit, son. If there was a moment that determined the course of my future, I'm pretty sure this was it. I had two somewhat simple choices. I could make a run for it and go back to Uncle Al's, back to the bonfire where my cousins and dear sister would still be drinking and revel in the normalcy of a Saturday night, and forget I ever went to this horrid place and ran into this weirdo. Or I could go with said weirdo up the stairs in this decrepit old lighthouse, which was most likely condemned and unsafe, towards some unknown person or thing that was walking around, potentially waiting to murder us in horrific ways. It didn't seem like a very hard decision to make. In fact, I think 99.7% of people in the right frame of mind would have picked from column A and gone on with their merry lives. But for some freaking crazy reason, I thought that maybe, just maybe, I should go with this stranger up those kelp-ridden stairs and toward the lair of unimaginable horror. You know, because it was a more interesting alternative. I turned on my camera with my other hand and let Dex lead me away from the fresh air and freedom toward the monstrous uncertainty that was waiting for us further inside. Chapter 4. Dex and I passed under the doorway as thin strands of cobwebs reached for us from above. We walked slowly to the staircase, listening for further noises from whatever was upstairs. The stairs weren't rickety like I thought they'd be, but were slick with mold and seepage. The walls of the circular staircase were also wet and dark, fulgent in the sharp camera light, and there was no railing to hold on to. I followed Dex onto the first step, and my foot immediately began to slide out from under me. Luckily, my docks were fairly new and could grip like no one's business. I was able to steady myself without having to touch the icky walls. "You okay?" Dex whispered, his grip tightening. I nodded, then made the motion for him to be quiet, even though whatever was upstairs already knew we were coming. We rounded the corner. I was glad Dex was in front, though I doubted his slight frame had the ability to protect me. But alas, when we reached the floor and shone our lights around, there was nary an axe murderer to be found. Couldn't say I was disappointed. There were two shut doors in front of us, one that led into the building, like the locked one below us, and the other, I assumed, would take you into a circular room overlooking the sea. Neither door had external locks on them, but I had no desire to see if they were open. The doorknobs looked wet and gross. Dex looked perplexed, not relieved. Suddenly, the door to the circular room swung open and banged against the wall loudly. My heart leaped into my throat, and I nearly jumped out of my skin. "Jesus!" I exclaimed. Dex didn't seem too bothered. He let go of my hand and walked into the room. This man definitely had balls, if not brains. I saw the camera light shining around the walls, and then he came out again. He gestured to the door.
"Just a door."
"What?"
"Making the noise, false alarm."
"But I heard footsteps, just like when you were up here."
He shrugged. "I know, I thought I heard that too, but there's nothing here, just like there wasn't anything here earlier."
He shined his light up the staircase.
"I never made it up there, though. I bet that's where he is."
"He?" I asked, my chest tightening. "Who the hell was he?"
"Old Roddy,"
Dex said simply and started for the stairs. I reached out and grabbed his arm firmly. It felt nice. There was muscle under there after all. "Who the hell is old Roddy?" I said angrily. I was sick of feeling like I wasn't being told the whole story. Dex was silent. I shined my light in his face, causing him to squint harshly.
"If you don't know, then I don't have time to explain."
He sneered in the brightness. He eyed my hand on his bicep. I didn't let go. "Make time," I said. Then, from above, another thump, this time much louder than before. It definitely was not the sound of a door banging in the wind. Dex stiffened at the sound. He looked at me intently, then relaxed. I let go of his arm. He leaned in and pointed above.
"Old Roddy is the lighthouse keeper."
I didn't get it. "There is no lighthouse keeper here. My uncle doesn't employ anyone. There isn't even a damn light up there," I said.
"Yeah, well, rumor has it that old Roddy's been here all this time."
"All this time? How long is that?"
About 80 years, maybe more, maybe less.
"That's impossible," I scoffed.
"I know. Like I said, that's why I'm here."
I took in a slow, deep breath. Whatever Dex was saying wasn't making any sense to me, and even worse, the more I tried to make sense of it, the more I felt dizzy and disoriented. This situation, this Dex guy, it was all too much for me to process. And unfortunately, when my mind couldn't properly process what was going on around me, my panic attacks start to kick in and weird shit happens. "I need to go lie down," I said quietly. He cocked his head, curious, and reached out for my hand. He didn't give it a comforting squeeze, though, which any normal person would have done. He just pulled me closer to him and led me up the next flight of stairs until we were now on the floor above where the last few thumps had come from. With my breath and heart stuck in my throat, Dex illuminated the level. It looked exactly like the one below it, save for a desk in the corner. The doors were also closed, and no lighthouse keeper was to be found. Suffice to say, I had a bad feeling about all of this. Whether it was due to the creepiness of the whole situation, or that I should probably head back before people started to worry about me, I couldn't say. Plus, I was starting to question the sanity of Dex and his quest for some lighthouse keeper who clearly didn't exist. You know, I started to say. I was interrupted by the door, which blasted open by itself again and swung back and forth wildly on its hinges, connecting against the wall with a bang. What the fuck? I yelled above the noise. It was literally the only thought I had in my head. Dex took a curious step towards the animated door, the breeze from its steady swinging movement ruffling his hair. He aimed the camera on the door for a few moments, the eerie glow adding to the mystery, and then shone it on me.
What do you make of it?
He asked. The light was blinding me. Are you seriously filming me? I yelled. Bang! The same sound of doors flying open and shut came from downstairs. The noise was overbearing, and within seconds, the whole lighthouse was vibrating sonically. I immediately put my hands over my ears. I could feel it in my fillings. I took a shaky step towards Dex, hoping for some comfort in a beyond terrifying situation. The only thing he did was aim the camera back on the door, which was still flying open and closed as if some invisible angry teenager was slamming it. He took my hand off my ear and placed my own camera in it.
You might want to film this,
he bellowed above the din. Though filming was the last thing on my mind, I did what he said. I made sure the camera was still recording and focused it on the door and Dex. With my ears exposed, the sound shook me from the inside. I managed to record at least 30 seconds of the phenomenon, until my vision was suddenly wiped out. A white, overpowering light filled the room. My hand completely disappeared in front of my face, as if I was being airbrushed into oblivion. I shut my eyes in pain and crouched low on the ground, my senses knocked completely off balance. The white, nuclear light, the banging doors, and internal vibrations, was this the apocalypse? I positioned myself so I was closer to where I assumed Dex was and opened my eyes through the spaces between my fingers. It hurt too much to keep them open for more than a second at a time, but I didn't see him anywhere. Dex! I yelled as loud as I could. I looked around me, but all I saw was whiteout. Where was this horrid light coming from? Was I dying? A movement from the direction of the staircase caught my eye. There was a dark shadow of a man or creature wavering in the light. It came closer and closer. My mind instantly conjured up images of alien abduction. Every single X-Files episode started flashing through my mind. The shadow kept coming. For some reason, I thought I should get the cause of my impending death on film, so I pointed my camera at it. I closed my eyes, made a silent prayer, and braced myself. But silence. The noise and vibrations had stopped, and the light behind my sore eyelids was quickly fading. I opened my eyes to complete blackness, with throbbing fuzzy dots filling my vision. It was almost scarier than all-white blindness. Someone could have been standing a few feet away from me completely undetected. Slowly, I got to my feet and flicked on the light of my camera, bracing myself for illuminated terrors and the things that went bump in the night. There was nothing. The darkness remained. My camera was unresponsive. Fuck, I swore under my breath. I tried to examine it in the dark, but all I could figure out was that the battery must have died. Great fucking timing. I took in a deep breath and tried not to let the wild feelings take over, that the blackness was alive and ready to eat me. Dex, I called out. I was still listening, but heard nothing except my voice echoing across the hallway. Where the hell could he have gone? Old Roddy? I joked, half hoping some decrepit lighthouse keeper would answer me. It was better than this unnerving silence. There was still some moonlight coming in through the windows, and that soft illumination was enough to put the idea in my head of getting downstairs and getting the fuck out of there. I had inched over to the staircase and was just about to step down on the first step when another light came on below. What now? I couldn't take much more of this. But it wasn't like the apocalyptic virtual H-bomb going off. It was a weak light, which danced on the staircase walls and then settled in one spot. If I were to head downstairs, I would walk straight into its path. It reminded me of Dex's camera light. In fact, I was certain that's what it was, but in my heightened state of paranoia, I wanted to make sure before I began my descent. "Dex, is that you?" I asked rather loudly. No answer. "Dex, I can see a light downstairs. Is that coming from you?" "Dex, answer me." Still nothing. I didn't know what to do. The fear was palpable. It was physically running up and down my arms in prickly flashes, swarming my body, flaming my racing heart and my throbbing head. I must have stood there for 5 minutes, just listening for any sounds whatsoever, terrified of what I might find downstairs. My imagination was conjuring up images of kelp come to life like some kind of monster. Where was Dex then? Where did he go? Why was the camera light on and not moving? One part of me believed he must be playing a cruel joke. The other part thought he was dead. Or worse. And with that thought in mind, I slowly made my way down the stairs. I winced at the creak of each step, though I'm not sure why I bothered trying to be quiet. The moon disappeared behind the clouds, making the light below look sharper and colder. Sly shadows of creepy crawlies skittered across the sweating walls. I turned at the landing and made my way down the rest of the staircase. The light was now in front of me on the ground, aimed at my feet. I stopped, wishing I could see beyond the glare. "Dex," I whispered. "Please answer me, Dex. This isn't funny." If he was trying to freak me out, he succeeded, and I knew he would hear the terror in my cracking voice, but still, there was nothing. I took a deep breath and bent down to pick up the camera, only it wasn't a camera at all. It was a flashlight. Confused, I turned it over in my hands. Did Dex have a flashlight before? I was racking my brain trying to remember when I heard a low groan. Not the groans of a person or a thing, mind you, but the impersonal sound of a door opening on its hinges. It came from the door to the right. I aimed the flashlight into the blackness. For a split second, I was afraid I was going to see something vaguely horrifying, like Dex standing in the corner of the room and staring at the wall. Yes, the last scene of the Blair Witch Project came to mind. But instead, the hall was empty. Nothing there except the door leading to the circular room, which was now wide open. I shuffled toward it and stepped inside. It was a bedroom, at least it had been at one time. Now all that was left was a thick wooden bed frame that looked partially burnt, a side table with a stack of books, and a wardrobe in the corner. On top of the wardrobe was a porcelain wash basin with a mirror propped up against the wall. The flashlight's reflection glared sharply in it. There was a round porthole-type window facing the ocean, coated with a thick layer of grime and salt. Something about the window registered in the back of my overworked brain. Had I been here before? Was that possible? I took a few steps closer to the window when, blam! The door slammed shut behind me. I screamed and dropped the flashlight, the light spraying the walls as it landed on the ground with a thunk. I winced and quickly scooped it up. The light wavered and then started to fade. Panicking, I shook it hard, but the bulb had been jarred out of place from the fall. There was still light, but it was growing weaker by the minute. That or the darkness was growing stronger. That's when it happened. That's when it hit me. A light from the hallway went on. The edges of the door glowed amber. The image seared into my head, and like pieces in a puzzle, it slowly fit together with another image that came shooting out of my memory. My dream. This was my dream. My breath caught in my throat as all the puzzle pieces found each other. The round room, the porthole, the light outside of the door. Sure, I wasn't standing in a nightgown and barefoot, but it was the same place. It wasn't possible by any earthly means, and yet I wasn't sure what it meant, either. Things were the same, but different. Was it going to follow the direction of my dreams? Was the door going to open with some black, shadowy menace enveloping me into certain death? Was the man in my dreams old Roddy? Or Dex? Maybe, I thought quickly. This was a dream. That thought gave me a bit of courage. I swallowed hard and walked over to the door. I listened. I couldn't hear a thing from the hallway. I grabbed the knob and tried to turn it. It wouldn't turn, it was stuck. I yanked on the door, panic rising from the floor. I started throttling the thing, my hands sweaty and slipping. This was my nightmare. My worst nightmare was coming true. I was locked inside. Someone, something, had locked me inside. "Dex!" I screamed and started banging on the door. "Please, someone, anyone, let me out, please, please!" I screamed the last word, loud and shrill, hurting my own ears. Screaming seemed like the only thing I could do. I screamed again and hurled myself at the door, even though it opened from the inside. My camera swung from my neck and smashed against it, but I didn't care. I had to get out. I put both hands on the knob and pulled until my hands lost their grip and I flew backwards, landing on the hard floor. A pain shot out from my hip bone, but I scarcely felt it. Then everything turned black. The light outside the door disappeared, and the door outline faded into the abyss. The hairs on the back of my neck stood up with icy precision. I knew something was on the other side of the door, waiting, listening. I lay on the floor, watching breathlessly, my body rigid and braced for action. The door creaked open, slowly. At any moment, I expected to see a tall black figure appear in the doorway, make its way over to me, and smother me with its nebulous face. I waited. The terror was indescribable. But nothing happened. I took a few seconds, trying to mull the situation over, but everything was coming up blank. And so, propelled more by instinct than consciousness, I leaped to my feet in one go and took off like a shot. I ran through the door without casting a glance around me. I ran down the stairs until I slipped on the turn and was launched against the slimy, weeping black wall. I had no time to be horrified at the grossness. I regained my footing and leaped over the last few steps and onto the ground floor. I wheeled towards the open door and burst through. Blam! I collided into something large and heavy, again. I let out a blood-curdling scream and I stumbled from the impact. I might have had an out-of-body experience at that moment. I never knew I could scream like that. The figure was screaming back at me. I didn't know if it was an echo or what, but I wasn't going to wait to find out. I scrambled on my feet, slipping a bit from the goo under my treads, and the thing reached out and steadied me. "Perry," I heard it say. How did it know my name? My head reeled, my heart pounded, and all instinct still told me to run for my life. I was about to when it shook me. "Perry, it's me." "Me? Dex?" "No." In the light of the waning moon, Matt thrust his face in front of mine. "Holy fuck, you scared the hell out of me," he whispered, his voice cracking. "Matt?" I asked incredulously. "What the hell are you doing here?" "What am I doing here? Perry, what the fuck? What are you doing here?" "Matt?" I could hear Tony's voice calling from upstairs. "Is that her?" I turned and saw Tony coming down the stairs, his phone in one hand and a huge industrial-looking spotlight in the other. He saw me and let out a sigh of relief. "Perry, thank God. I almost called Dad." Matt put his hand on my shoulder. "What are you doing in here?" I had a hard time composing my thoughts and my breath, so I just shook my head and gave myself a moment. The twins stared at me, more curious than concerned. "What were you screaming about?" Tony asked. "Did you leave this?" I managed to ask Matt, holding up the dying flashlight and ignoring Tony's question. He nodded. "Yeah, I put it there so Tony could find his way back downstairs. If he used that spotlight in here, it would blind us all. This thing is pretty intense." "Huh," I mused, not sure what to make of that. "Was that what that blinding light was?" The twins looked at each other and shrugged. "Ada was shining it on the lighthouse from the outside," Matt said. "Ada," her name sounded so sweet and familiar. "Where is she? Is she okay?" I asked anxiously.
"She's fine," Tony said warily. "She and Wiz are waiting outside. Are you okay?"
"Yeah. Why?" Matt laughed.
"How drunk are you? Next time you want to go exploring the lighthouse, just tell us, okay? I mean, are you fucking nuts coming here alone at night? This place gives us the creeps in the daytime."
Tony nodded.
"I can tell some fucked up stuff is going on in here. We even get phone calls from ghost hunters and shit wanting to film it. It has a history or something."
Ghost hunters. Filming? Suddenly, it was all beginning to make some sense. And then I remembered Dex. "Did you see anyone else in here?" I asked slowly. Or hear anything? They both shook their heads. You didn't even hear me yelling for Dex? I asked. I heard you screaming your head off, Tony said. Who's Dex? I shook my head. Scratch that. Nothing made any sense at all. We should go back, Tony said gently, perhaps sensing my mental fragility. I nodded, done with talking. We carefully exited the lighthouse through the broken window. I hoped I never had to step inside of that place again. There was a comforting sense of normality outside. Ada and Wiz were making out around the corner. Okay, that wasn't the first thing I wanted to see, but the minute she saw me, she stopped sucking face and came running over. She threw her arms around me. Not a normal move from her. Thank goodness, she exclaimed, slurring. I thought you were dead, or maybe you jumped off the cliff. That's nice, I said blankly. I started walking back towards Uncle Al's place.
Did you see anything fucked up?
Wiz called from alongside Ada. I thought I did, was all I said. If Matt and Tony were roaming the lighthouse while I was inside and they didn't see any sign of Dex, maybe Dex never existed. Maybe he was just another one of those imaginary friends of mine, long lost since childhood. I looked down at my camera. It wasn't working, which meant any proof of what happened would have to wait until I got it fixed. I hoped it wouldn't cost me a lot of money. I sighed with some effort, suddenly overcome with acute mental and physical exhaustion. I was so tired that when we finally made our way back to the house and put out the bonfire, I nearly passed out on the pull-out couch with my clothes on. Ironically, drunken Ada was the more coherent one. What is Mom gonna say when she sees you passed out in your clothes? She admonished. I nodded at that and slipped into my nightshirt and pajama pants. I threw my clothes on the floor. Papers and change flew out of the jacket. Ada picked up a piece of debris and peered at it. What's this? I looked closer. She was holding a business card in her hands. Who is Dex 4A? She asked, looking up at me. I snatched it out of her hands and turned it over in mine. He did exist. A ghost, I said dreamily, before falling fast asleep. Chapter 5. The ride back to Portland the next day was strangely silent. I was busy mulling over the events from last night, twisting them over and over again in my brain, which was drained from my restless sleep. My sister was hungover as hell and already made my dad pull the car over so she could vomit. I hadn't talked with her about what happened in the lighthouse. In fact, I couldn't bring myself to talk to anyone about anything. I felt profoundly different, and as scary as it was to dwell on the unexplained, it gave me a sense of importance. I couldn't go back to small talk and polite nods. My parents were silent, too. My dad was furious with Ada for drinking, and I am sure he was also mad at me for letting her drink. My mother wasn't mad, as far as I could tell, but she was constantly eyeing us both in the rearview mirror. I turned away from her prying eyes and looked out the window. Fall had arrived overnight. The sunshine was gone. The wind hurled itself at our car and tore green leaves off of the trees, scattering them in the air. The air conditioner in the car was off, adding to the silence. I hadn't really come up with any solid conclusions about the night before. Radiohead's OK Computer was playing on my iPod and lulling me into a sort of dreamland, blurring reality. I started second-guessing everything that I thought I was certain of. And that left me at my dream. It was the thought I always ended up with whenever I replayed the scenario through my head, which was most of that morning. Had I really dreamed that? It didn't seem possible. In fact, how could it be? How could I dream something and then live it? Then again, though it was similar, it was still not the same, which either meant I was psychic in some really useless way, or it was a huge coincidence. What really scared me was if I had to experience the other dream I had. I wasn't looking forward to a dark figure standing ominously at the foot of my bed. And Dex. Dex had also been dancing around my head. I was so close to writing off that whole encounter as a figment of my imagination, but the business card that Ada found was proof that he was in fact real. I just wish I knew where he went, what he was doing there, and who he really was. There was something so maddeningly intriguing about him. His voice, his eyes, his mannerisms, his intensity. I wanted to learn more, and I wanted to know if he really was a so-called ghost hunter. I mean, I had been going to my uncle's for a long time, and though I've heard weird stuff about the lighthouse, this was the first time anyone mentioned it being haunted, let alone attracting attention from the paranormal community. I cleared my throat. "Hey, Mom, Dad." "Yes, Pumpkin?" said my mother. I hesitated, trying to figure out the best way to pose my question. I heard from the twins that they keep being contacted by, like, the Discovery Channel and stuff like that. Something about the lighthouse being haunted. My parents exchanged strange glances. My dad shrugged as casually as he could muster and eyed me in the mirror. "That's all nonsense, Perry. There are no such things as ghosts." "I'm not saying there are ghosts, Dad. I'm just saying it seems a lot of people think there are. In Uncle Al's lighthouse. Kind of weird, right? Did you know about that?" I watched my parents carefully. Ada did too, now that she was awake. They exchanged another glance, and I could detect a barely perceptible nod from my mother.
"No, sweetie. Sorry, I don't know what the twins have been telling you," he finally said. "Probably pulling your leg. You know how they are, always trying to scare you."
"Ah," I said, and sank deeper into my seat. I looked over at Ada. She looked like hell, but I could see she didn't believe my parents either. The twins weren't lying. My parents were. But why lie about something as random as that? I must have dozed off somewhere during my thoughts because the lurch of the car woke me up. We were home, our large, quiet house looming above us, the trees waving wildly in the wind. I got out of the car, the cold gusts catching in my throat and messing up my hair. We'd only been gone a little over a day, and yet the sunshine and optimism felt so long ago. I was back at the lighthouse, standing outside of it just underneath the tower. Its insides were lit up like a spaceship with piercing light coming through the porthole windows. A movement at the very top of the lighthouse caught my eye. A man came to the edge and looked over me and the ocean before him. He was fuzzy and devoid of shape or feature. It was as if my eyes couldn't or wouldn't focus on him. He lifted his arm and pointed to the sea. With the light splashing out behind him, it made his movements look like grandiose gestures. I followed his gaze and saw floating pieces of wreckage bobbing up and down among the waves. They glinted in the dark. I looked up at the man again. He was gone. I faced the ocean and the incoming wreckage. The man was now standing between the sea and me, continuing to search the waves. I took a step toward him. He wasn't tall or large, but there was a feeling of immensity about him. His black coat looked dense like a black hole, and the more closely I looked at it, the more it opened into a deep chasm. It was intensely magnetic. I reached out for him to see if my hands would disappear into his back. He turned around slowly. I paused, my hands outstretched. I expected to see his profile as it came into my view, but instead it seemed to fade into the night sky. Or the black sky was bleeding into his face. By the time he was facing me straight on, his face was gone and I was looking straight into the sea behind him.
"Everything isn't lost yet, kiddo."
A deep, smooth voice, a Cheshire smirk faded into view and out again. And then I woke up. Work on Monday was an utter disaster. I couldn't concentrate on anything. If I wasn't thinking about the dream from the night before, I was thinking about the real experience in the lighthouse. The last thing I was thinking about was answering the phones properly. I probably hung up on 10 different people. It was enough, anyway, that Frida, my boss, pulled me aside. "Are you okay?" she asked, stopping me in the hallway as I was scurrying back from the bathroom. Frida was just as petite as I was, which always made me feel I could relate to her on some level. She was only about 30 and was known to trade drunken late-night stories with me, or should I say I just listened to them, as I didn't really go out like she did. But there were days like today when her skinny face became one of authority. "I'm fine," I smiled, obviously not wanting to get into it. "Come with me," she said brusquely, and beckoned me to follow her into an empty office. With my heart pounding irregularly, I did as she asked. And she closed the door behind her. She had this concerned look on her face that made me feel on edge. I had a flashback to a doctor-patient scenario. "What's up?" I asked as casually as I could. In the back of my head, I knew the phones were ringing. Normally, my bathroom breaks weren't this long. "You're not a very good liar, Perry," she stated. That was kind of insulting. I totally thought I was. I gave her a half-hearted chuckle. "I don't know what you... I think you need to go home," she said simply. "Go home?" She sighed. It wasn't exasperated or annoyed, but more along the lines that she didn't want to get into explaining herself. She was going to have to, though, especially with the quizzical look I was giving her. "Remember a few weeks ago?" she asked, her voice taking on a warning tone. "You had that little attack of yours?" Ah, right. No wonder she was handling me with such care. "I'm fine," I said again, trying to smile brighter. "Look, it's all right. I know I'm your boss, and you can't talk to me about stuff, but if you need to, I'm here for you. The last few weeks, I've noticed you've been a lot different." "Last few weeks?" I repeated. She folded her arms and leaned against the door. "Yes, you've been sloppier, more curt with clients. You're looking more tired, like you haven't been sleeping at all. I don't know what's wrong, and I don't expect you to tell me, but I just want you to know that you can, if you want to. I'm not going to judge. I'd rather just know." I felt pretty embarrassed. "I don't know what you're talking about. I mean, no offense, but I hadn't noticed I was acting any different then." "But you notice now?" "I did have a rough weekend," I said honestly. She stared at me for a few beats. During that time, my mind went on a paranoid rampage. Okay, so yes, a few weeks ago I had a panic attack. I screwed up a call between some old bag on the phone and the person she wanted to speak to. She raised such a fuss about me. No, seriously, that bitch was cruel, that I ended up having a panic attack that a lot of people in the office, unfortunately, bared witness to. I just blamed it on PMS or something. I guess that hadn't really fooled Frida. But other than that, and a few other instances before, I was fine. "How about you go home and get some rest? Come back tomorrow if you feel better," she suggested gently. It would have been a dream come true. My boss was finally giving me a day off, and for no real reason, to boot. Except the way it was actually going down was completely humiliating. I felt my pride bristle along my back like porcupine spines. "I'll be fine," I countered. She gave me a sympathetic smile and said something rather chilling. "You won't. And that's all right. Really, Perry, life gets hard sometimes. We all know it. And we all know you can't deal with it while you're here at work. So, coming from a friend, really, just go home and sort yourself out. Come back full of pep and beans. Just deal with whatever you need to deal with." There was more to it than that. I knew that much. "And if you weren't my friend?" "You're projecting a bad image for the company right now," she answered bluntly. "Since that incident a few weeks ago, people have been a bit, concerned about you. I think it would be best for you and everyone else if you could do your job properly. You are, after all, the face of the company. So go home. Again, it's no big deal, but just go deal with whatever it is you need to deal with. And if you need assistance from the company, you know, in medical terms, if you need to talk to someone and that sort of thing, please don't hesitate to ask. We have some really lovely benefits in that area." My face was red and I felt sick. All this talk about panic attacks, and I was about to have one in this empty office. Frida was watching me closely. The hint of trepidation across her forehead told me that she was a bit afraid of what I might do or say. Ridiculous. I have one bad morning of answering phones and I get sent home. Well, I had no choice but to take the professional route. I told Frida that if that's what they thought was best, I would do what was best for the company. I've never cared about the company a day in my life, but suddenly I wanted nothing more than to prove them wrong. I'd go home graciously and with understanding, and come back tomorrow full of pep and beans or whatever the hell she was talking about. Back at my desk, I quickly gathered my stuff as Frida was gathering Alana to take over my duties for the rest of the afternoon. Because of that, she was going to be an even greater bitch tomorrow. I suppose I should have been happy to have such a concerned workplace, but it just didn't bode well for me. Call me paranoid, but I felt like this was the start of my job heading in the absolute wrong direction. With no choice and under my boss's watchful eye, I quickly grabbed my purse and headed to the elevator before Alana showed up and undid me with her ice queen glare. I got in the elevator. The door shut just as I saw Alana coming around the corner, the metallic closure eradicating her sneer in progress. Good timing. The elevator started to make its way down. I thought about what I would tell my mother when she caught me coming home early. The elevator lurched to a stop. The motion caught me off guard and I fell over slightly, catching myself on the rail. I had fears of malfunctioning elevators, but always brushed them off as irrational. Luckily, it seemed to have stopped with that one lurch. But I still wasn't moving, and the elevator doors didn't open. The floor buttons on the console were lit up in the shape of an X. It flashed X 3 times. What the? The doors opened faster than normal, like they'd been oiled with speed. A man dressed head to toe in rain gear stood on the floor, staring at me. His coat and pants were wet, and he was standing in a puddle, the carpet soaked through and spreading out in a radius around him. Before I could even comprehend any of it, the doors shut. The man didn't even make a move for them. The elevator lurched again, seeming to drop a floor. I let out a scream, feeling like I was in the Tower of Terror, but with no safety belts. The elevator stopped abruptly, and once more the doors opened. I expected to see the fisherman again, but the doors revealed the lobby, lit with daylight from the building's front entrance. 2 straight-laced businessmen were waiting impatiently on the tiles. They gave me a suspicious look. I must have looked scared out of my wits. I quickly walked out of the elevator, stopped in the middle of the lobby, and looked back at the 2 men. The doors closed on their amused faces, and off they went. "What the hell?" I said aloud, my hand at my chest. I almost wished that the creepy clown lady from last week was down in the lobby again, just so I could have someone to talk to. But alas, I was alone. I rubbed my fingers along my temple, trying to bring a sense of peace and clarity to my head, which now felt dangerously overloaded. I walked out of the building, gasping for the damp air outside and avoiding the eyes of the business people passing me by on the busy street. What just happened? I looked back at the ugly building, its sleek, tinted exterior that held a wealth of weirdness behind it. Maybe Frida was right after all. Maybe I really did need to go home and sort myself out. If it wasn't the nightmares or terrifying situations in a lighthouse, it was the imaginary fisherman I saw in my office building. I suddenly had no problems with writing it off as a sick day. I arrived back at home to find out my sister was there and in her bed. It turned out she might have the dreaded, infamous swine flu and was spending the next few days or so away from school. "Don't go visiting her," my mom warned me as she stirred a pot of chicken soup. "If you are sick already, you'll only get worse, even if you have a face mask on." "Mom, I'm not that sick." She eyed me. "You are something, considering you're here and not at work. I can tell that much. Now, go lie down." I obeyed and headed to my room. I had planned to tell her that I was sent home because of physical sickness instead of the truth. Anything that had to do with me and mental illness always brought out the worst in my parents, especially my mother. If I had told her that Frida sent me home because of concerns about my mental state, oh boy. As I walked down the hallway past Ada's room, I heard a muffled cry from behind her door. "Perry, is that you? I heard your bite." I stopped and stared at the door, not daring to come any closer lest the influenza be waiting on the other side of it. "Yeah, it's me. Work sent me home because I'm sick." "Do you have swine flu too?" "No, I don't have any flu. They just think I'm sick." Silence. I started to walk away. "Perry, can you come in here, please?" "No. Why?" "I need you to do me a favor, please." I sighed and edged closer to the door. "I can do you a favor, but I'm not going in there. You're swine flu ground zero." A loud, painful sigh followed, and then, "Okay, you see, it may sound funny, but, well," it was like pulling teeth. "What, Ada?" "Can you write on my blog for the rest of the week?" That was not what I was expecting. "Huh?" "I have to do my blog post, but I'm too sick to get dressed or take pictures. Plus, I look like shit." "Well, I look like shit too, so I can't be of much help." "It doesn't matter. I just need you to write a few posts, even if you're just updating people on my situation."
"Which is?"
Dad, I have swine flu. God damn it, Perry. Don't you listen to a thing I fucking say? Though I had an admitted potty mouth, I still winced whenever my sweet young sister dropped the F-bomb. Sorry, continue. Her voice came through more muffled. I leaned in closer to hear her.
I'll give you my login information and everything. You can go onto your computer and do it all there.
It sounded easy enough, but for the life of me, I had no idea what to write about. I told her so.
Anything. It doesn't have to be clothes-oriented. I would prefer if it wasn't, because Converse chucks and leggings will never be the height of fashion.
Burn.
And anyways, she continued, it doesn't even matter. I just need the post to be generated. If I don't post every day, I lose readers. Even by not doing it this weekend, I have already lost 10%. And if that continues, I'll lose my advertising revenue.
Not to mention global domination, I added.
Yes,
she cried out excitedly, then lapsed into a coughing fit. I grimaced and backed away from the door as a precaution.
Exactly,
she squeaked out when she found her breath.
Please, Perry.
Sure, sure. It'll give me something to do, at any rate. And hopefully it would take my mind off of my problems. Unfortunately, my own problems always had their slinky way of creeping back into things like Spider-Man's symbiote. As I sat there in front of my computer, staring blankly at the screen, I realized I had nothing to write about. Fashion was out of the question, as Ada apparently thought that would scare away her readers, which I didn't understand because leggings, studs, zippers, chains, and a whole lot of black was so in right now, according to the other blogs I've read, anyway. Not to mention how she is constantly borrowing my stuff, but I didn't want to argue. It was her blog and livelihood, and I had to remember that in some ways this was a real job to her. I considered writing a little blurb about my experiences as a failed stuntwoman, or maybe a bit about one of my favorite bands, Slayer. But I decided no one would give a damn about my times at the gun range, and speed metal wasn't made for her audience. Then it came to me. I knew exactly what to write about and how to do it. I leaped off my chair and brought out my ailing camera. Luckily, it worked well enough that I was able to transfer all of my pictures from the weekend, including the video. I whipped open my film editing program, and for the next few hours, I immersed myself into the filmmaking process. Most of the video I shot was pretty low grade. I mean, it was a digital SLR, not an actual video camera. The sound was scratchy, and the light, though bright in real life, didn't pick up much detail. But the experience was all there, and even when I faltered in trying to remember some details about that night, maybe I was trying to block them out, I don't know, the video brought me right back to it. And to Dex. Seeing his face and the grainy footage, hearing that deep, almost sneering voice of his, brought a wave of excitement over me. Where he came from, what he was doing there, where he went? These questions were just as intriguing as the other ones that surfaced. Dex aside, the video was pretty damn creepy. The eeriest part was seeing movements and flickers in the shadows around me. Now, despite my interest in the paranormal, I never watched those ghost hunting shows on TV. Ironically, I am too chicken shit and my imagination is far too powerful. One show and I would be convinced I had a ghost in my house. But I knew enough that the only time you can really pick up ghosts on camera is when you see those little white spirit orbs and what have you. Well, that's exactly what it looked like in one of my shots. It was as I was heading up the stairs following Dex. A white shadow flew up the dark walls and around the corner as if it was trying to race me up the stairs. I shivered and immediately flicked on all the lights in my room. That part was definitely staying in the film. You see, the only thing I had to talk about that was even remotely interesting was what happened to me at the lighthouse. And with the video to play alongside it and back up everything that I wrote, I knew that it could actually be a worthwhile addition to Ada's blog. A bit offbeat, but attention-grabbing nonetheless. Worst-case scenario, it had her readers coming back to see what would happen next. I decided to break up my story into three different posts and schedule them so they would publish days apart. That way, by the time Ada felt better and was ready to blog again, my story would have been told with maximum impact. That night, I busily worked away on my story, relaying my nightmares in fervent prose and capturing the jittery atmosphere as I approached the lighthouse. I ended the film part right at the moment where I kicked open the window and disappeared into the building. Despite feeling ill at ease as I remembered each instance of the lighthouse mission, I fell asleep that night with a smile on my face.
I didn't have any dreams. Chapter 6. I woke up the next morning to loud banging on the door. It sounded like something was going to break it down. I moaned and rolled over. It was 10 a.m. I had already woken up at 7:30 to call my boss and see if it was all right for me to work today. I had felt a lot better than yesterday, maybe not full of pep and beans, but then I let it slip that my sister was at home with the swine flu. I guess the flu paranoia had a hold over everyone because the conversation went from, yes, come in, to no bloody way, stay home until you know for sure you don't have swine flu. Well, I knew I didn't have swine flu, but I can't say I argued at all with her logic. Though it still didn't reflect very well on me, this was their doing. Plus, I was lazy, and the thought of Alana being stuck on the phones for an extra day made me cackle inside. What? I yelled at the pounding door, my morning voice cracking. Can't I sleep in? I'm sick. Maybe. Let me in, Ada yelled from outside. Don't come in, you sicko. I sat up. I didn't actually want to contract this infamous flu. Perry, my blog. Holy shit. Oh, crap. The night before returned to me. She was pissed off that I took her fashion Bible for jealous tweens and turned it into the ghost whisperer. Sure, I had Jennifer Love Hewitt's rack, but not the rest of her body post I'm a size 2 slim down. I sighed and crawled out of my warm bed, quickly slipping on my house robe. I walked over to the door and leaned against it. I could imagine her fiery expression behind the door. I'm sorry, Ada. I didn't know what else to do. Open the door. She pounded on it hard and my head felt the impact. I suppose that because I probably ruined her career and her income, I deserved the swine flu. I opened it and took a few steps back, covering my nose and mouth with the sleeve of my robe. She stood before me looking wan and bony. Her eyes were flashing with brilliance, or anger, giving her the appearance of a madwoman with frazzled white hair, like Doc Brown's granddaughter. You are a genius, she exclaimed. Come again? She waltzed into my room and over to the computer. Please don't touch anything, I pleaded. Oh, whatever. She scowled and proceeded to run her hands all over my desk. I wondered if I had enough hand sanitizer in my drawer to eradicate her. She flipped my laptop open and immediately opened her blog post, or should I say my blog post. Look, she pointed at the screen. I edged closer and looked over. It looked the same as it had last night. I shrugged at her. Have you seen the comments? She asked incredulously. Ada, I just got up. She shook her head at my priorities and started scrolling down the screen to the comments section. She turned to look at me, utter shock and glee, and maybe a slight hint of admiration in her eyes. 200 comments. Huh, I mused. That's good, right? Good. I've never gotten that many before. I mean, sure, lots of people look at my blog and all that shiz, but 200 from your post? The most I've ever gotten was 160, and that's only because I was giving away a Chanel scarf. You gave away a Chanel scarf? It doesn't matter, Perry. Focus. This is insane. And all because you made up this crazy ghost story. I scoffed. Made up? I didn't make it up. That's what happened on Saturday night when you were busy knocking boots with the Wiz. Her nostrils flared. If she was standing, her hands would have gone straight to her hips. First of all, I did not knock boots with him. And second of all, his real name is Mario. I couldn't help but laugh. Mario was not much better than Wiz. Well, I tried to explain. If you had actually told me what went on that night instead of ignoring me, maybe I would know that instead of assuming the worst of you. I love how naturally you assume the worst of me. Whatever, it's irrelevant. You're irrelevant, I countered, poorly. Good one. Anyway, you're the one who ran off alone. Talk about being irresponsible. And as you can now see, this is what I ended up doing. Exploring the lighthouse. And scaring the shit out of everyone. And myself. There was a lot of stuff that happened later that I can't even begin to explain. Okay, so write about it. Now, look at these comments. She started reading from them. Can't wait to hear what happens next. I've got goosebumps. And this totally got me in the Halloween mood. And where's the rest of it? I want to.